Nutty Bites, because nerd girls are hot.
Hello, Mixed Nutcases. This is Nuke Chas, and I've got a special episode of Nutty Bites for you today that was recorded live at Balticon. And we're going to have the Red Like Roses panel from Balticon for your listening ears today. And it is the Talk Nerdy to Me crew and the Nutty Bites crew getting together and talking about our favorite anime, depending on whose definition, Ruby. And I hope that you enjoy it. We had a lot of fun doing it. And these team-ups are a lot of fun for us, so I really hope you guys like that. But before we begin, I just want to thank the patrons. I want to thank everyone so much for helping us out. I'll be having a video put up on Patreon soon. You can also listen at the end of the podcast. There's going to be a special promo that I am playing that I recorded for one of our patrons. And that's something that all of you patrons need to remember, that if you want a promo recorded, I will write it for you. You just send me a script. And that is what Aurora Lee did, and she took advantage of that fact. So listen for that. I hope you enjoy it. I also want to thank Jason Banks of the Talk Nerdy to Me podcast, Aaron Jackson, Beth, Frank, Shane, Harold, Ian, Jen, also of the Talk Nerdy to Me podcast, and you'll hear her and Jason in this, Susanna, Aurora Lee, Melissa the Bathtub Mermaid, Lynette of the Bicast, Susan, Ken Kennedy, Kinsey, Patrick Scafito, Mike, Rich the TT, Dagny, and sometimes Nick. Thank you everyone for helping support this podcast and keeping us going and helping us give you two times as many podcasts a month than we've been doing for most of the podcast. So thank you so much, everyone. I hope you enjoy this.
Welcome to the Red Like Roses panel, where we are going to drop our phones, which are our timing devices. We're going to talk about a really awesome anime, Ruby. And
I call shenanigans.
We will get into an argument later.
In a little background, we've got the Talk Nerdy to Me podcast and the Nutty Bites podcast that sometimes merge together and are the Intro to Ghibli podcast. Come back for our Intro to Ghibli, where we talk about Princess Mononoke. But I am Nuke Chas, the producer of Nutty Bites, and I've got Chumi right here.
I'm Jen. I am co-host on Talk Nerdy to Me podcasts.
And I'm Jason, the brainchild behind the Talk Nerds to Me podcast, and the least favorite. They all love her because she corrects me.
Basically.
Hi, I'm Tech, the antagonist of both podcasts, possible supervillain, and a dropper of F-bombs that make nutty edits. I'll try not to do that this time.
And one M-bomb that ruined
and this is a little late, but there we go. We love Ruby. We've done two episodes now just talking about Ruby, and we wanted to do a special episode at Balticon where we really got into it, especially because of Volume 4. But let's start with just kind of like overall, what is it about Ruby that makes you so passionate?
Oh, it's not an anime. That's one thing that makes me so passionate about it. It's not
let's
an
get
anime.
Right into this fight right away.
Oh, it's not.
Let's lace up the gloves. Let's go.
It's heavily influenced, and I will openly admit that. But it is not an anime. It's an American-made, American-animated, American-written. Well, technically, Monty was Asian, but whatever.
He's American also.
Yeah, but he's born here.
Yeah.
So it's not anime. But no, what makes me so passionate about it is literally because, one, it's a female-driven show, and as I've always referred to myself, and Nutty will tell you, she says I'm a feminist. I'm a pocket feminist. But I feel that you have so many strong characters in the show that it just, none of them are, you know, as the Frog Pants podcast, Film Sack calls them, they're not chicks in a bucket. They're not there to make the male character strong. In fact, the females make the male characters better, not because they're like, oh, save me, save me. They actually help them, teach them, and impart wisdom that they already have to that male character.
They die.
Yeah.
Well, but I do want to add on to there. It's kind of like The Craft, as we realize it's kind of the reverse of what you normally see in TV and movies, where the female characters are all three-dimensional, and most of the male characters in Ruby are kind of two-dimensional, and the best, save for a few of them, like Jack.
And the two-dimensional male characters actually are made fun of, in a way, using Neptune as the focus.
Right.
A male character comes to him in one part of the show and says, "Dude, you hit on all these girls. Do you not think about them when you do this? I mean, you shot down another girl for what?" And we later find out it's because he can't dance. But it's a really good moment, and it helps both of them grow as characters. And by the way, we did an episode on The Craft for my Halloween Horror Fest on the Talking to Me podcast. Ding.
Ding.
Yeah. But no, it's that's why I love Ruby, because they have organically made female characters who are strong, and they're not just, you know, guys with wigs on, right? Like, these are actual female characters. They actually have female problems. I mean, we see that just naturally and intrinsically in season 4 with Yang's character. Not only with the backstory and reason why she wants to be a huntress, but also what happens to her in season 3 and culminates, and we learn how she adjusts in season 4.
So, Tech, what makes you passionate about Ruby?
What Jason said, you know, that they're fully fledged female characters, and that it is not... The Monty Ooms drive from the very beginning was that it was going to be zero fan service. That it's not about sniping panty shots, and it's not about them being there to augment male characters or just there to titillate the audience. The fact that he's here to tell a story, and he's always been here to tell a story. And even after he, you know, sadly passed, that the rest of the cast and the crew has carried on with this idea of we're here to tell a story. And the idea that it's, you know, four high school girls in short skirts, while it's a fact, it's not the driving motivator, and it's not about, wow, who's going to hook up with who, or whose skirt's going to get shorter this episode, or, you know, like we were just watching before we came here, we were watching Sailor Moon Crystal. A friend of mine asked me to describe Sailor Moon Crystal. I said, well, it's like Sailor Moon the original, except their legs got longer, their eyes got bigger, and their skirts got shorter. As if that could possibly happen. Somehow they made it happen. Mind-boggling, but...
The dialogue got worse.
Yeah, and the dialogue got worse, but... as if that could happen. But Ruby isn't about any of that. It's about telling a funny story and telling a joke and playing with the tropes that is anime. I mean, I'll ask everyone here in the audience here, what is the name of Ruby's dog?
Zwei!
And about being super happy that it's a caffeine-fueled rocket corgi.
That pilots mechs.
Right, that pilots mechs and all the rest of it, and having fun with all of these facts. And we need to redecorate our room. How are we going to do that?
Suspend our bunk beds from the ceiling?
Right, with a giant montage of redecorating the room and having fun and playing with all of these tropes without it turning into, like... I'll use the term again, panty sniping. It's not about that. It's about having fun with anime.
It's not High School of the Dead, I'll tell you that.
Jen? So the thing that got me into Ruby was the original trailers.
Mm.
They were so good. It was the first time I had seen that. It was the first time I had seen that kind of artwork, and the chicks actually pulling off all of these action and fights, and there was no men, like no dudes. I didn't have to sit there and, you know, the women are in the background being the sidekick. These are actual women kicking ass. The artwork was amazing, and so I watched the first episode. First episode, oh, are you robbing me? Like, seriously. Like, I
totally knocked out the mic.
It was very fun. It made me laugh. And I couldn't stop watching after that. So I'm watching the characters grow. I'm watching them have problems and learn teamwork. And we're seeing family problems. And we're seeing, no, I left my family so I could grow my own self and grow independently. And
looking at you, Weiss.
Yeah, definitely looking at Weiss. And it really caught me, and the entire story, it blends really well.
I really like it because, well, I like what you said there, mm-hmm. that the art from the beginning is really engaging. I'm drawn to that art. And I saw the first trailers and I said, okay, I'm in. And I really loved that they play with fairy tale. That there is a constant thread of fairy tale throughout the entire series. But I also really love how they play with all of the tropes, and they are an homage to pretty much every anime out there. And when people say, this is not really anime, I'm like, well, yeah, it is. It is. Because I don't hold country of origin to my anime, and I don't, you know, hold that it has to be hand-drawn either, because I could cite a million examples where that would break the rules.
She's using the actual definition of anime, not as a Japanese animation, but what anime incorporates.
I didn't say it was Japanime, which is what anime used to be called.
Oh, we don't want to talk about that dark. We don't want to talk about that dark time in anime history.
But I really love how they use it to push the story along, but also that, I mean, this show makes me feel. And that's what makes me passionate.
You had to bring it up.
Even before then, from season one, I cared. Mm-hmm. I really cared about these characters and their stories and what was going on. And they don't talk down to you. They don't have to explain every detail. I mean, how long did it go before we understood what dust was and how it was used?
They use curiosity as well.
Yeah.
I mean, if you think about it, right, I would love to write in this universe. You're in a place where monsters feed off fear, despair, and loathing. We talk about monsters in, you know, folklore having caused these things, but it doesn't sustain them in any way. These things are attracted by it, and they feed off of it, and they try to consume and destroy what makes it. And we see that as a prime example in season three, the Ember and her cohorts, along with White Fang, create despair. They create a dichotomy in the city that causes an attraction to the Grimm. And I love the name Grimm, but I love it. And that's what brings them to the city. And you realize they're not coming to the city to kill. The Grimm technically don't exist to destroy humanity. They exist because of the things that humanity causes within itself. And it's exemplified in that struggle between Ember and her crew and White Fang and the people of Vale and Remnant and all that good stuff. And that's what I think they do. That you become curious as to why this is happening. You also become curious as to why these certain things exist in the world. The Grimm, White Fang, and they tell you that. And I loved it when they started introducing the snippets into the show. The world of Remnant snippets. I love it because it not only explains the maidens, it explains the political structure of Remnant and everything in it, you know, Vale and the cities. And you get more of that in season four, but again, it's all over the place. And
that's just like Monty's notes that they're just throwing
exactly.
in.
Yeah, exactly. And I love how
they looked at his world Bible and said, we have to show people.
And so that's the big problem with the series is that the creator, the showrunner, Monty Yum, passed away halfway through season three, and that they had the voice acting complete and everything written all the way to the end of season three, and then they had his notes to carry on through season four. So as we go into season five, we're heading into sort of unknown territory, where it's all of his friends and his co-creators and the staff and the crew that are just sort of heading on from where we go. And what Monty Yum brought to the show, first and foremost, that sort of fell off was his fight choreography.
Absolutely.
And the animation, what really drew me was the animation in those first four trailers of, you know, Ruby fighting the werewolves and using the recoil of the gun-activated scythe to cut off their heads and ricochet through like a demented pinball machine.
If he's not a gun fanatic, you just found out.
Right. Or, you know, Yang with the shotgun gauntlets fighting the two girls with the Russian names but the Bad Valley accents in the middle of a dance club.
Cool thing about those two girls is what stood out about the choreography was the fact that those two girls used kung fu. One of them was a kick-based kung fu.
Oh, yeah, with the switch kicks and
the leg wiggle, which is something you would see in Jackie Chan's Legend of Drunken Master. And as soon as I saw that, I was like, yo, I'm watching the show. I'm going to watch it till the wheels fall off.
But, and it was subtle, but when, or subtle to me anyways, but when Monty Yum died and the rest of season 3 happened and the animation that he directed stopped, you could really see a difference in flavor. And I'm not going to say that it was better or worse. I'm just going to say that it was very different. And the fight choreography changed. And when they were going through the tournaments and you met Neon Cat and...
my man, Flint Cole.
Flint Cole. A blaxploitation character, if there ever was one.
Absolutely, but it's great because it's done in good taste. And it's also not done in a way to demean and or diminish the character. In fact, Flint Cole, real sidestep on Flint Cole. He's an homage. If anybody is a Rooster Teeth fanatic or fan, he's an homage to a joke that the Rooster Teeth guys have had since Red versus Blue. But he is a blaxploitation character. His name is Flint Cole, and his partner is Neon Cat, and that is obviously they're playing off Jive Talk. But they're not diminishing and they're not hurting the character in any way. In fact, he actually could have won that fight because of what he says to Weiss at the beginning of the fight. He goes, you know, my dad used to be a dust seller. He had a dust shop. And she goes, oh, that's cool. And he goes, yeah, until your family bought it out and put my dad out on the street. And then you realize that it gives teeth and consequence to what's going on in the story, especially with Weiss, because up until that point, we kind of just think of Weiss as a rich, spoiled kid who's kind of an ice queen, which they call her all the time. But it gives gravity to what happens in her backstory. Again, see more of it in season 4.
So what I want to talk about now is I want to talk a little bit about... let's start with favorite characters, bar none. So let's just discuss the characters a little bit. So... Jen, who is your favorite character?
Ruby.
And why do you love Ruby so much?
I know
don't tap the table.
I know that, you know, the anime itself is, you know, named Ruby. Ruby is my favorite character, though. She's younger than everybody else.
In the goth lady is.
But she's very spunky. She's very fun. She holds herself responsible for a lot of what's going on.
Justice will be swift.
And
it'll be delicious.
Part of that has to do with the fact that she's the actual group leader, and she was given that huge responsibility.
Reluctantly.
Yes. Yeah. But another part of it is she's very loyal to her friends and doesn't want to let them down. And she feels that they all are friends, even though Weiss is, like, denying her for the first two seasons.
You know, her...
completely.
Her loyalty to friends is actually causes a problem later on.
Yeah.
So, Tech, favorite character that hasn't been mentioned?
No, because I just had a whole rant about Ruby.
And she totally took Ruby from you and the snipes?
Yeah.
Ouch. Favorite character has to be Sean.
Oh, you...
See, this is how you create conflict.
Oh, you douche-waffle.
Spelled Jaune, which in French means yellow.
Oh, you douche-waffle.
And I am French, so I can say this. Ha ha ha, suck it. The beauty of Jaune is they bring him in as the classic foil. They bring him in as the comic relief character. And, you know, he's got all the great lines in season 1 when he's talking to Ruby. And about, your weapon's a scythe? Yeah, it's also a high-powered, highly customized, powerful sniper rifle. Huh? It's a really big gun. Guns are cool, too.
I got a sword. It's also a shield.
And look, it shrinks and grows. Does it get lighter?
No.
That's cool. Or, my semblance is polarity. You control poles? No, I control magnetism. Oh, magnets are cool too.
That was Ruby.
That was in Nora. No.
But it also helps that Jaune is a homonym to one of your favorite historical figures.
Right, Joan of Arc.
Yeah.
But they gave Jaune all of these great lines, and they gave him... He started off as this foil. He was just the comic relief. He was the slapstick sort of normal character.
Which I hated.
My favorite Jaune trope is when they're getting springboarded into the magical forest to go fight the evil creatures, and you will use your own special techniques to land. My own special what? And then Tara's already landed. She's got her spear. and you have to turn the volume all the way up to hear it, but she throws the spear, and in the stereo you hear, thank you, as he is now speared to the tree by her spear through the hood of his hoodie. And
by the way, inciting incident to the romance, by the way.
Oh, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely.
If that wouldn't make you like an iron bar, nothing else will.
Oh, I mean, I'm debating on who I'm choosing. But.
Okay, so yeah, Jean. So go ahead. Favorite character?
That hasn't been mentioned.
Since he took Jean from me.
Flint Cole?
No, it's going to be a toss-up between either Adam, who we don't see much of, or Pyrrha.
You got to go with Pyrrha because we see her.
And I got to go with Pyrrha. Yeah. Because, and not because she is literally the epitome of why I think this show is very feminist. She's strong, she's powerful, but she's super kind, understanding, but at the same time, she's vulnerable. And she's vulnerable because of the goofy farm boy, Jean. as you see later on, as you see from Jump Street, Jean is in love with Weiss. He loves Weiss. He loves the way she sings. He loves the way she...
He's infatuated with Weiss.
Absolutely. But my thing is, he's infatuated with her not because of how she looks. Yeah. It's because she sings, how she fights, and how cool her fighting is. He says it outright. He's like, dude, have you seen her fight? It's awesome. And that's why he likes her. But the reason why I think Pyrrha is probably my favorite character outside of Jean is because she has everything, but she doesn't want it, and she only wants to be normal. She only wants to be the person who can be a Jean or a Blake or a Ruby, and she can't get it. I mean, as we see in season 3, they choose her to be a maiden. And it's not because of who she is. It's because of how she is. The abilities she has. The skills she has. They didn't choose her because she was a great person.
Well, and also, I think they chose her because it wouldn't... Maidenhood wouldn't corrupt her.
Exactly.
The stuff she can't control.
Absolutely. And what I love about her character is that she doesn't question the duty behind the choice. She questions... She even asks Jean, which I think is great. It's one of the best bonding moments between them. And the only one we really get before her, spoiler alert, departure from the series.
Yeah, we're going to spoil all of Ruby. We're good.
She says, do you think I would... She asks him basically, do you think I'll still be the same afterwards? What do you think will happen? And Jean doesn't understand. He doesn't know what's really going on. So he just kind of gives her an answer. And she's like, she decides, you know what? Okay. I'll accept this. I'll do it. And he's like, wait, what do you mean? And she actually slams him into a wall with her polarity powers and tells him, basically, go away. You know, I have to make this choice. And he runs after her, and that's how he's there for her departure from the series. And I love Pyrrha for it. I think everything Pyrrha is exactly what needs to be there to make characters, not just Jean, but every other character better, because... She has no flaws. And in most things, a character with no flaws is a Mary Sue or whatever. But with her, the fact that she has no flaws is her flaw. And it's because of her personality. She wants to be normal. She wants to be just a normal student. She wants to have friends, but she can't because of how good she is. And she can't stop being good. That's just who she is. And with the whole maidens thing and everything, it sucks having her gone in season 4. But I think it left open a door for great things. And I think that's what makes her a great character also. Because she opened the door for bigger and better things that they shit upon in season 4.
So it's going to be a toss-up between Yang and Professor Goodwitch, but I'm going to go with Professor Goodwitch because I'm pretty sure we're going to discuss all the awesomeness of Yang throughout this panel. I absolutely love Glinda Goodwitch. She is amazing. Her semblance and her power is phenomenal. She repairs things. And to me, that is amazing.
So even after the horrible destruction that is the best episode ever, the season 2 opener of the gigantic like
food
cafeteria
destruction. Or the horrible destruction
fight
of the end of that season where the town is destroyed.
Oh, that's nothing compared to turkey gauntlets.
Where yeah,
justice will be swift. It will be delicious.
So she's able to just still yell at these kids while putting everything together, but she reminds me of...
She's Professor McGonagall, by the way.
Yes, shut up, I'm talking. Every good teacher and mentor you ever had who was not cuddly, was not sweet, was stern, and treated you like she would an employee because she expected more from you.
But because she loved
like
you.
Like Professor McGonagall, as we all know from Harry Potter. You know, this is a trope that I'm extremely attracted to, and I love Professor McGonagall for the same reasons. That is always going to be the character that I gravitate towards because I've had that teacher. I have had that mentor, and it changed my life. And I absolutely love it, and I would love to be that character.
You know, that type of character, they would. The McGonagall reference is I think, I think it was deliberate. Because McGonagall delivers one of the best lines in Harry Potter when she starts. Because here's the deal, it's not Dumbledore, it's not someone else. When she walks through Hogwarts and says, "Hogwarts, it's time to stand up and protect your school," that's when the school comes to life and protects itself. And with the good witch.
Yeah.
She's the one keeping Ozpin in check. She's like, yeah, I get it. They're students, they're kids, but they still have to have.
And Ozpin's totally Dumbledore.
Oh, he's
totally Dumbledore irresponsible.
If you mashed Clockwork Orange with Dumbledore, that's what you get.
Clockwork Orange?
Yeah.
Oh, no. I see what you mean. I was like, huh? What?
Because he's definitely with the cane and the hat, and
that, we already have somebody that's Clockwork Orange, and
he's
a villain.
He's a villain, but he doesn't have the same.
Yeah, Roman.
Yeah.
He doesn't embody the good part of that.
All right, so now what? My question that I had prepared, we've already kind of hit.
I'm dead
really. What are some of our favorite moments from the series as a whole? What would be the first one that comes to everybody's mind?
Food fight.
I mean,
you want another one? It's from the Yellow trailer.
Can we talk about the food fight?
We just did. Let's keep going. All right, turkey gauntlets.
Turkey gauntlets.
Almost sausage links.
Leek spinning.
Which is another homage. Oh. And the fact that we actually get to see all of these characters that we love fight against each other. Because we have all played.
Except for the guys.
Who would win in a fight? This character. Well, they would never fight each other.
Except for the guys, by the way. Because Rin and Jean, even though Rin does more than Jean, they both get knocked out of the fight, and it's down to the ladies.
It's true.
Apparently, the soda machines that are in that scene
have
as well,
grenade sodas.
But they're references to other shows by the same company. There are other Rooster Teeth references.
Yeah,
you can get T-shirts with the same logos as those cola machines. Apparently,
you know, and I love, again, I feel that food fight was definitely Monty Oom at his best, like you said, because it's how he references the things he likes. He made Ruby because he loves kung fu movies, he loves anime. And in that fight scene, you have improvised weapons like any Jackie Chan movie. Chan made improvising kung fu a thing. You know, I point back to Legend of Drunken Master because I remember seeing that on the big screen and watching how fast and fluid he did, which is one of the reasons why I do not like Iron Fist. And by
the
way,
this is not the Iron Fist panel.
I know.
That's Sunday.
Sunday, come check it out. We're doing a retrospective about the problems with Iron Fist. And one of the problems I had with it was the fact that they did a Drunken Master in that show. And he darn sure wasn't Jackie Chan. He wasn't fast. He wasn't fluid. I had a problem.
All right. Wrong show. Back to Ruby.
Ran it in.
Thank you.
But no. The fact that they do this whole scene about improvised weapons, and if you think about it, you got to imagine like when they were in the studio going, so how are we gonna do her gauntlets? And then Monty Oom's like, turkeys. And they're like, wait, what? And he goes, dude, turkeys, boxing gloves. And like, absolutely. And they just go from there. And it's great because Nora absolutely hits her to the moon with her watermelon hammer. And that whole, the structure of that whole fight is great. And it's just
a castle.
And it's an homage to everything that you love about kung fu, anime, and those, the things that are tropes within those two genres.
So that is one of like the best scenes overall.
Ever.
And I love it being sandwiched with the one, the destruction of the city scene. Mm-hmm. And that is an amazing scene. That, because not only do we get to see the characters that we know fight, that's the first time we get to see other teams fight. And Bunny Girl, I can never remember her name.
Velvet?
Velvet, thank you. I can never remember that. Well, you'd think I could.
Team Caffeine.
Team Caffeine.
Team Caffeine shows Velvet. Up. You've got Velvet with her box. No. Not yet. Use and then later. We get that later.
Yeah, and she goes, she's like, whoa. You spent all year saving that up. Don't use it now. And her Velvet, and because she's just like, I'm going to just gun everything down with my Gatling gun.
Yes.
What's your answer to the situation? Gatling gun.
Well, you know, that can solve a lot of problems.
I mean, that was her answer in the fight against Mercury and the other girl, because they blended into the tall grass. So she goes, oh, you're trying to hide in the grass? I'm going to mow it down with my Gatling gun. And
I love how they take the different fight scenes and then they work them into the next big fight scene, and it becomes, the fighting becomes part of the storytelling. So we're getting towards the elephant in the room, which is, you know, volume 4. But before we get there, and we might overlap, what made you cry?
Oh, you better not take it from me, you bastard.
I'm going to start with one before Jason's heartbreak is Penny. Really, like, that got me. Penny's demise was so hard.
She was combat ready.
She was combat ready.
And we, you know, we talked about it upstairs. If Pyrrha had done that move against any other student, it wouldn't have had that outcome.
Exactly.
And I think that's what makes Ember and her people that evil, is they knew if they put Penny against Pyrrha, metal versus polarity, something atrocious would happen.
Yep.
And we even have the setup in earlier in the season when Ruby meets Penny and she's like, and Penny goes, I don't want you to freak out, but I'm a robot.
Well, that's, yeah, when they're friends for a little while and then she finds out Ruby, she's a robot.
And Ruby just goes, awesome! And Penny's like, you're taking this conspicuously well. And she goes, so what? You have a soul. I know you have a heart. And you're just like, aw. And then she gets torn to pieces.
And we love Ruby even more because of it.
She weeps. Welcome.
Welcome.
So what made me cry?
Yeah.
Jean in a dress.
Yes.
And not because it's a dude in a dress, but because it was such a heartfelt and poignant and legitimate scene.
Second moment of their great relationship.
Oh my God. It was so good. And then it's like, why are you wearing a dress? Look, I have 7 sisters. Do you not think I know what a dress is? And just, I told you I would, and I'm doing it, and here I am, and I'm gonna rock it on the stage, and everybody's going, oh my God, look at that guy, he's so embarrassing. And he doesn't care because he's staring at the girl that he obviously cares a lot about, and they're sharing a moment, and you know, people be damned, he's there for her and no one else. And really, I think that's a moment that we should all sort of hold close to our hearts. I mean, if you are willing to rock a pink sundress and stand out in public to be ridiculed by your peers because you don't care about them, you're there for the person directly in front of you, that's somebody that's important, that's a moment that's important to you, and that's something to do, something to be treasured. And wow, it got to me a lot. And everybody else like, look, he's wearing a dress, what an idiot. No.
That makes it even more of a grandiose scene.
Absolutely.
And Jean and Pyrrha show us that you can be friends and have real feelings when somebody's got a crush. You know? And that they ended up having something so much stronger
because they're both dummies.
Than a simple crush.
In those instances, yeah. They're both dummies. Because he can't see that she likes him.
Oh, yeah.
And she guts down and swallows the fact that he likes Weiss and chooses to help him.
Because she cares more about him
than anything
than
else.
Being with him.
Well, being with him.
Yeah. And that's, you know, as many of us have had in our lives, that can be a really difficult situation. But if you actually care about a person, you can care about
them. If they could both be 30 IQ points stupider in that moment, they could have a fantastic relationship.
Yes.
But they're both, like, so smart, and they're both thinking so far ahead.
And they're so perceptive.
And they're looking
each other.
And they're looking so deep into it. If they just stopped and, I don't know, jammed a pencil up their nose for a couple of seconds, and they'd realize that they both really care for each other, and they'd have a fantastic time.
So, Jen, is there anything that you want to say before Jason goes into his cry fest?
He's coming.
Yeah, Winter and Weiss.
Ooh.
The scene with Winter and Weiss sitting down to lunch, and you can definitely tell that Winter was raised... She took to authority better than Weiss did. She is very structured. She's very stern. And she wants her sister to succeed. She says it's to show, you know, the family, like, pride, to give them honor. But at the same time, it's not. She's being the older sister that's caring for her younger sister. And she's helping her be as strong as she possibly can. And that right there, the whole family dynamics, like, that's what made me cry.
Good pull, by the way. Again, where it goes.
Jason, more. Start crying.
Here we go.
You all know what I'm going to say. The death of Pyrrha. Here's the deal. Season one, we get her saving him with the catapult fall. Season two, we get Jean in a dress. Not for anyone else but her. He literally tells her, and he's too stupid to realize what he's saying. He says, "You're Pyrrha Nikos. You're awesome. You're amazing. You're the best student in this school. Every guy's clamoring over themselves to be with you." And in reality, she emasculates them because of how great she is, and they don't want to have a thing to do with her. The only guy that does is him, and that's the one she wants, and he likes someone else. Then we get him in the dress. They bond. He lets go of Weiss. And then in season three, we get the moment where they're sitting outside and she's debating the choice of becoming a maiden and potentially losing herself. And he, you know, she asks him basically what to do. And he says, you know, "I think you'll be fine no matter what you do. And I'll be there for you regardless." And then we get her wanting to make the choice, but she has to fight Ember. And obviously Ember is more powerful than her. Jean can't hang in this fight, which is one of the reasons why I feel this show is very feminist. Because in most shows, like Dragon Ball Z, whatever, he would have found a second gear to kick into to hang in that fight. No.
Isn't even my final form.
Exactly. He gets punked, put out the fight, and it's between Pyrrha and Ember. And Ember is obviously stronger, but Pyrrha is too technical and skilled, and she still loses and dies. Murdered, turned to ash, and Jean watches. It is gut-wrenching, because the only time where they're actually on the same level about how they feel on one another is that scene outside of the room, and where she then ends up telling him, basically, "Go away. I can't make this decision if you're around." And that kills me, because we've been waiting three seasons for the culmination of that. And we get it, sort of. And the worst part is, at the finish of it all, we know we can't get it again, because there's no coming back for Pyrrha.
The thing with this show is, if the character dies, they're gone.
Yeah.
This is not a show that brings them back. There is no second chance. If they say,
"Hey, yeah, there's no Dragon Balls."
Yeah, If they say, hey, this character is dead, I'm sorry, but that character's dead.
And that season four opener with, hey, wow, Jean, that's neat new armor you're wearing. Where did you get the medal for that?
I don't know what made me feel more, Pyrrha's death or Jean's new armor.
Oh my God,
I cried.
Dude, the thing, the worst part about it is the whole time when season four starts, I was going, okay, well maybe... What I thought was going to happen was, because they talk about it in season three, they say the last person they see, mm-hmm. the maidens, is the one who the power transfers to.
The person they're thinking of. Yeah,
and unless it's a guy. But my thing is, well, what happens is, since she didn't have all the power, and it was kind of a partial thing, and they had done weird stuff to it, what happens if she ends up thinking about Jean so much that she goes inside of him and becomes part of him? And he becomes the first male maiden, right? So, you know, what happens if that happens? What do we do then? You know, do we get a force ghost of her helping him become better, and then finally he has to grow up and say, I know you're dead, I have to accept that.
Use the force, John. Yeah,
you know, and move on. But we don't get that at all either. What we get is Ruby waking up in season four, hearing the voice of Pyrrha and questioning, wait, what?
Yeah, that made you question. You thought it was going to be something.
Definite force ghost. But no, it wasn't. It was one of the videos that she made for him to train when she wasn't around. And Jean, dealing with his grief, does what he does. He trained under her tutelage, even though she's gone. And it's gut-wrenching. It's absolutely gut-wrenching. Yeah. And that's why she's my favorite. She's great.
So, before we move on to Q&A, Volume 4. We do not have Monty writing it. It is very different. I want to talk a little bit about it. I will say Yang's storyline gave me the most feels, for sure. There's quite a few really good things about it. Like, we actually get to meet...
her father.
Their father. We get to find out more about the legend of the maidens from Crow. That's really cool. We get to find out about Ren and Nora, and that makes you all teary. But it wasn't a volume arc. It wasn't a story. Volume 1, Volume 2, Volume 3. Arcs. Self-contained arcs. This just was not that. It felt like the bonus season in between seasons.
I want to rant and rave about season 4. Because I did not like it. In fact, I feel...
Definitely weak.
I feel it was the weakest. Period. And...
You're still going to come back for Volume 5.
Oh, absolutely. But the reason why I felt it was the weakest is because they didn't do any more growth with Jean. After that scene with the videos, we get nothing. We all knew Nora and Ren had a thing for each other. We didn't need it ham-fisted in as the season finale fight. We didn't need that. Because they could have definitely had that grow organically.
But it's more than a thing.
Family. Oh, absolutely.
Yeah.
And they could have let that grow organically. And they could have gave us that fight with that monster as a mid-season thing. Because the culmination of that is definitely an in-season thing. I also feel that the only character in that fourth season that goes through any sort of growth is Yang. And hers is so gut-wrenching. But I don't think they touch on the subject that we need to touch on the most, is that it's Adam. Blake's ex. The one that Blake risked it all for.
He should have been in Volume 4.
He should have been in Volume 4. He was, sort of.
Should have been in Volume 3.
But we also should have had Blake handling that. Because here's the deal. You used to help this guy.
Yeah.
He took one of your best friend's arms. He crippled her for life. And you're nowhere around.
Yeah.
You ran away like a coward because of what happened. And she saw Adam in that fight. She saw, matter of fact, if I'm not mistaken, it was Blake who found Yang after that. And she's still gone. That is what kills me about that season. You have to have that confrontation. You have to have Yang saying, it's because of the dude you left behind why I'm crippled and hideous. Because that's the way she treats herself.
We have been teased about the Blake Adams story.
Since her trailer.
Since her trailer. Black trailer.
By the way, he cuts a train in half. It's awesome.
And it's... I got blue balls because of Adam and Blake, okay? And I gotta break Jason by saying that. It's so frustrating. And I'm just... Oh, all about it. I liked Volume 4. It is the weakest of all of them. It doesn't feel like a season. It feels like bonus content in between seasons. I really hope they do better with Volume 5. I don't think they are. I think it's going to turn into a soap opera, not a self-contained story per volume, which is a little frustrating, but I'm still going to keep tuning in.
Wait.
What I'm hoping for is that Volume 4, the people that are doing it right now had to put their own twist on the story. They don't know what Monty was going to do. Now that Monty's gone, they had to put their own twist on the story. I'm hoping that Volume 4 was weak, but it was because they were putting their twist on, and Volume 5 will continue on and become stronger.
And transcend into its own thing.
Tie them all back together, yeah. All
right, yeah, That's what I'm hoping for. I'm going to share that hope.
I think that, no, you're right, that they knew where the story was going. They knew there was a definite endpoint, and they were building towards it. And 4 was that transition period where Monty's notes end, and we know kind of where he was going, but we have no bloody clue how he was getting there. Yeah. So they had to put their own sort of spin and take on things and animate it their own way and their own fight scenes and their own stories and their own tales. And now that they've got that built, they've got that world built, they have their relationships, they have the people where they want them, now they can go for that finale. Mm-hmm. And I don't think season 5 will be horrible. I don't think it'll be the ending we want. And we deserve. No. It will be...
If they do end it on season 5, it's going to be rushed.
Yeah. I don't want it to end in season 5.
Season 6, maybe, but season 5 is going to be rushed.
I mean, especially with... I mean, was it end of season 2 you saw Yang's mother for the first time?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and we haven't seen her again.
Yes, we have. In season 4.
Picture. In the picture, but I mean like
no,
the
no,
character.
No, in season 4. We see her in season 4. She has the drink with Crow.
Yep.
When he goes to the bar, that's Yang's mother.
That you're right.
And that's
I forgot about that.
And that's why I don't think season 5 can be the end. I don't think season 5 can be the end because, one, we don't know about Team Stark.
Yeah.
We don't know about how they go. And by the way, can we just say some of the best choreography in season 3 is the fight between Crow and Winter? Mm-hmm. And I love how he's basically saying, and I quote, "Get off my lawn," to Winter. Because every moment he's with her, he's like, "Why is she here?"
Like, the tension between them is so
he literally hot, says that to Osben. He goes, "So we're trying to save the world, and why is she here?" And the dude's like, "He's got a point, Winter. Could you come back later?"
Clockwork site.
And I feel like we'll find out more about that now that we know that Crow's thing is basically bad luck, and anyone
that is,
cares about gets.
I will give them this. Maybe I'm a Monty fanboy, but I want to give him credit for that. I think he decided to give an abstract semblance. Because if you notice, everybody else's semblance has some sort of physical manifestation.
Yeah.
You can't manifest bad luck until it happens, right? And Crow even says, look, it's never bad luck for me.
Yeah.
It's always bad luck for either who I'm working with or who I am fighting against. Until, however, he ends up taking the bad luck for Ruby. Because Ruby should have gotten stung.
Yeah.
But it was him.
So, before we take our Q&A, I do just want to say, how sweet is it that Monty's brother is voicing Ren?
Yeah.
Totally sweet.
And it's almost seamless.
Yeah, it really is. Mm-hmm. And I like it because Ren is talking more now. He almost never spoke, but now we've got somebody, like, really playing him.
So does it mean we don't get don't do anything to the cook aprons? We don't get any more of those?
Oh, I want one of those. So I'm going to open it up for some questions, comments, things that you think we should have talked about. Go ahead.
Sorry if I missed this, but season 3 was done from notes?
Half and half. It was I think mostly written.
No. It was all written.
Yeah,
he died,
written.
And he died halfway through production.
Yeah.
Mm. But all this stuff we see is what he wanted us.
Yes.
To.
Yes.
So, for the most part.
So all of season 3 was written before he passed away. Season 4 was his notes that they then fleshed out. Season 5 is going to be all new material.
So the sudden deaths, the stuff that remains, that didn't come out of nowhere.
No.
Exactly.
And, yeah, and if you go back and you look through season 1 and 2, there are hints to the maidens. There's hints to their stories and their arcs and the seasons, which is why in I think season 4 is where we get the long arc where they tell the story of the maidens or how they originally started. And I think that was because of how Monty kind of spiced in there the concept of the maidens.
Was that 3?
Was it 3?
Before we found the Autumn Maiden?
It was 3. Yeah. 3.
See? Jen's awesome like that.
That's why I got her.
So
she keeps in check.
So because Penny is a robot, do you think that there's any chance she might be rebuilt and come back? Because I think that'd be awesome.
Oh, I hope so.
So I have that thought. Unfortunately, she does say that she was the only one of her kind because of her personality. So if she does come back, it will not be the same Penny.
It'll be a different Penny.
Yeah.
She may be combat ready, but not
bringing out that same aspect.
Yeah.
Well, see,
the new Penny.
That's one of my conspiracy theories. That they will bring her back, but she will be literally a blank slate. None of the experiences she had.
So if they bring her back, she's going to break our heart, is what.
Exactly, because we know how great and how much she loved Ruby, but because she's not going to remember Ruby, it's going to kill us. It's because Ruby and her were great friends, and she even risked a lot of things for Ruby just to be her friend and have a normal life. But because she's not going to remember, it's going to
The chaperone that Penny had, the girl that was very on time.
Punctual.
I have a feeling that Penny's personality would be closer to that. She'd
by the
be
way,
very on point on everything.
I love that description she gives her. She goes, you know, she's kind of like Blake, except ordered to hang out with me. She goes, oh, so Weiss then. It was a really good one. That was a really good
joke. So you had a question.
Wasn't the villain for like first 2 seasons Cinder, not Ember?
Yes.
Same thing.
Yeah. They're the same one. Because what it is is the maiden that she takes half the power from is named Amber.
Yeah.
Cinder and Ember are the same character. They dub her Ember in, I think, 3.
Yeah. So before she takes on the maiden, she's Cinder. After she's Ember.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, yes.
No, I agree that season 4 was probably the weakest, but it also had probably the most world building.
Yes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yes. So, your points are valid, but in my opinion, it's almost like they had to spend time developing the world.
Right.
Because it's their... They have to take it and continue on with their situations.
Now, they're probably not going to try and finish it in 5, and if they're going to finish it in 6... This is just building up to much bigger.
No, you're 100% right, and that's what I was saying, is that, you know, this is what happens. That he died halfway through season 3, they had season 3 written, they had his notes for 4, and then it's, well, what do we do now? So they had to put their own spin on it, their own take on it. 4 is weak, yes, because it's a whole new bunch of people just sort of thrust up to the front.
It's
going to
be almost a new story arc.
Exactly.
And you can
and then
say,
what's going to end up happening.
But don't get us wrong, like, 4, we were still watching with bated breath every time an episode came out, and we're glued to our TVs. I mean, season 4 is still a million times better than half the anime I like.
Absolutely.
You know what I'm going to say about season 4? At least I'm not waiting 2 weeks for a 3-minute, 22-second episode like I did in season 1.
You know, and...
How long is this episode going to be? The trailer was longer. Oh.
And, you know, and with season 4 and their world building, I think that they support your theory because of how Blake's storyline ended in season 4. It ended with her finally saying, yo, Adam, F you, bro. And she finally
kind of accepts the affection from Sun.
Yeah.
Even though it took him taking a shot. He was a chick in a bucket. He had to take a shot.
He was totally a chick in a bucket.
He told him to take the shot.
Almost a girl in a refrigerator.
By the way, I will say this, though. I love her dad in that. Like, basically, he's like, look, that's my daughter. Get away from her, young man. And he's like, no, Dad, I'm awesome. And the dad's like, no, you're not.
I do not like that boy. Her parents are amazing, but I think her dad is what you would be if you were a dad.
Probably.
That's like totally you.
Probably. Grumpy and terrible. It's fine.
Absolutely.
So I have to say I like season 4 better than season 3.
Yeah.
Mm.
Oh, because season 4, yes, it's not, there's no threat. Or rather, the threat is all diverse. There are a bunch of different threats. There's no single cohesive story. But it does a very good job of bringing us through and saying, okay, you remember how season 3 ended really badly? This is how badly season 3 ended, that we have to spend an entire season recovering from this.
Yeah.
Season 3 has a lot of really good things in it, but you know what? I don't think the best fight is between Winter and Crow. I think the best fight in season 3 is the food fight.
Well, no, it, no, we...
Season 2.
That's season 2.
Oh, you're right.
That's season 2 intro.
That's season 2. In season 2, the best fight is... They never hit that fight again in season 3.
In the entire series, they never have. That's the best fight in the series.
Best scenes.
Hands
down.
Pierre Salas, I know it's polarity, but do they make soda cans out of something different in that world? Because
yes, be quiet. Stop thinking about that. Aluminum is magnetic. We can all be quiet now.
It's shush. It's the iron enriched sodas.
Stainless steel 7-Up.
Magnetic materials.
Well, mind you, if you watch that whole thing, she doesn't just pick up cans. She picks up paper and all kinds of stuff. It's whatever. It's a great fight.
It's the ink in the paper. It's the ink in the paper.
You know, she's not Magneto. It's Poles.
I mean, they could have said she has the semblance of push and pull.
Yeah.
Now, with your statement about season 3, I'll say this. I feel season 3 was better than season 4 because of why you think season 4 was better.
But he's totally right.
They have to recover from season 4.
He thinks it's better.
I know. But in season 3, there's a lot of, wait, what? Which is great. But it's also, but it also feels rushed.
Yeah.
In the same way that 4 feels very relaxed.
See, I think that the reason why you have to recover in season 4 is because of everything that happens, right? Jean needs growth. He needs to learn to deal with grief, and he doesn't, and they drop it. And I think that's because they're going off notes and not Monty being there saying, hey, this needs to happen.
I love Jean, but it's Ruby, not Jean. Or Juniper. The show is called Ruby. R-W-B-Y.
Well, if he hadn't took it, he would have been my favorite character.
But I really like how they're looking in season 4 at the whole trauma. I mean, Weiss has PTSS.
Yeah.
She's a traumatized... Sorry, PTSD. She's a
You knew what you meant.
Veteran.
Yeah.
And the only one who gets it is the general.
Yeah?
Yeah.
And even though they're not on the same side,
who becomes a wino. Like, for some reason, he just becomes an alcoholic.
He's dealing with the whole season.
That's not just for some reason. That's for a very specific reason. Yeah. Oh, my God. I love the relationship with the dad. And for anybody in the new media community, it's Chooch. it's Chooch, right? Thank you.
It's important that when she gets over to the degree she does, it's not, I'm going to kill Adam's assets. I'm taking the white friend back.
Yeah, that's mine.
You're telling me that Ruby spends an entire season, all of season 4, with runs in her stockings and doesn't find a new pair?
Nope.
Or take them off?
Nope. Deal with it.
#deal with it.
Look, the cans... We figured out, and you're upset about the stockings?
Yes.
So here's the deal. She keeps changing her stockings.
No.
But they've all got runs.
But her semblance, you see.
Now, I will say this.
Gotta wrap up.
Yep.
About Blake and the White Fang, and what we don't realize in this situation is that Son Goku... He wins. Because when he first introduced, he tells her, why do you wear that bow? Why do you hide who you are? Yeah. If you're this character and
because
you like this.
Because she's only there to make her better, which is awesome. So we have to wrap this up. Thank you, everyone, for coming and joining us. You can find us at TalkNerdy2MePodcast.com and NIMLAS, NIMLAS.org. Thank you so much. We're done. Woo!
This is not the podcast promo you're looking for.
Because Aurora Lee is not a podcaster. She wouldn't even record her own ad. She's a travel photographer who also enjoys a bit of geeky experimentation. Lego, Star Wars, minifig, Valentine's, anyone? Like many other creatives, she wants to share her physical art with everyone. But also, maybe not go broke doing it. Support her over on Patreon, and she'd love to send you art for you, your wall, and even your friends. Patreon.com/AuroraLee. AuroraLee.
Nutty Bites is produced by NIMLAS Studios under a Creative Commons Attribution No Commercial Non-Derivatives 3.0 International License. That means you can't change it without my permission. You can share it and send it to your friends. Just link back to me, my site, and everything. We live at NIMLAS.org, which has links to everything social media, including Facebook.com/group/NuttyBites and Patreon.com/NukeJoss, or call 347-Nutty42.